Hello and welcome to Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, I'm your pal, I'm the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can follow me on Twitter, at LukeBraunNFL. You can follow the show, at Locked On Vikings. We got a game coming up. Can't wait to break this one down. I think this will be a really fun opportunity for the Vikings to get redemption against the Chicago Bears in Week 17. With everything on the line, marquee matchup, maybe try to get a little bit of redemption after they kind of laid an egg on Sunday Night Football in Chicago. And there's a lot going on in that one, and we'll talk about it in a second. But first, I want to go back into the Lions game. I know that if you're listening to this, the Lions game probably feels like a lot longer ago. But usually I would use the Tuesday or the Wednesday show to kind of go over some things in a little more depth than I could in the like instant rapid reaction, instant game review. But because of the holidays, we didn't have that show. I do still want to kind of get to some of those things and talk about the Lions game. And this is the second week of the Kevin Stefanski era, and I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of the things that I've noticed are coming out of him from a play selection standpoint. You know, it's hard to scout, and it's hard for NFL teams too, and I think that's actually going to have an impact on this upcoming game and the potential playoffs. It's hard to scout a team you haven't seen a lot out of. It's why you get a lot of weird results in the beginning of the season. You know, if you think back to like week one, the Bucs beat the crap out of the Saints in New Orleans. Like, who would have seen that coming? And a lot of other kind of weird results happen earlier in the season. And it's because the better teams who are better at scouting and better at game planning don't really get a chance to showcase that. It's a bit of an equalizer, and with the new offensive coordinator, it kind of dissuades teams from scouting what the Vikings have done for most of the season, right? Well, is this a tendency anymore? You know, if the Vikings were maybe really, really keen on running up a certain gap or running a certain run play, or they had some plays that you would kind of see two or three times a game and you knew that you'd have to prepare for that, and then you see that Stefanski only did that in one of the games, do you still prepare for it? Is it something he does, or is that only a DeFilippo thing? Maybe the Vikings didn't like it. Was that play good? Maybe they don't want to do it anymore, and that's part of Stefanski's thing. It makes things kind of hard. And so take everything about Stefanski with a grain of salt, but this is just what I've noticed in the first couple of games, is that he really is taking bits and pieces from everybody's playbook. There's been a bunch of bubble screens and a bunch of kind of yards after the catch oriented plays. It's a very Shermer, very Musgrave type tendency. But even going deeper, there have been some Shermer plays. There was a great call out the first touchdown. I think it was the first touchdown, the Diggs touchdown that was wide open in the Miami game was the exact same play that Pat Shermer called in the very first Monday Night Football tilt against the Saints to kick off 2017 with that crazy Bradford game. One of those touchdowns is the exact same play that Kevin Stefanski is calling now. We also saw in the Lions game one of the plays in the two-minute drill that led to the Hail Mary. I think this was like two or three plays before the Hail Mary. There was a completion to Adam Thielen for like 18 yards that was 7-heaven. And you might recognize the phrase 7-heaven from the Minnesota Miracle. It was the exact same route concept. And just real quick, the reason that it's called that is a 7 route back in the Air Corps yell. This is a very Norv Turner terminology thing, but it's kind of seeped across. A lot of teams use this now. It takes all of the routes in a route tree, you know, in route, out route, post route, corner route, curl, hitch, all those, and it just numbers them off. So a 9 route or a go is a go route. It's if you run straight forward and the whole idea is to just run really fast in a straight line, that's a 9. And if you run a post where you run downfield a little ways and then you cut at a 45 degree angle inward toward the goal post, that's why it's a post, that's an 8. A corner, which is the same thing but 45 degrees toward the corner outside, is a 7. So it's 7-heaven. It's a bunch of 7 routes. So you if you go look at that and go to at Luke Braun NFL and just click on media, you'll see a bunch of all 22 videos, one of those. You'll see that they ran out of the bunch. So I believe it was Buffalo left 7-heaven would be the terminology. It's all going to be changed year to year anyways, but that would be the terminology. Buffalo meaning bunch for the BU, and with an F, that means that that refers to the running back, but bunch left, and that's the three receivers when they line up really close and kind of tight into each other. And it actually helps Adam Thielen get open because there's so much traffic around there. He's able to release off the line of scrimmage with absolutely no contest from Nevin Lawson, who's the cornerback who's on him. And he's able to run his corner route and get way open. And it's an easy pickup in a 2-minute drill. It's really interesting that Kevin Stefanski has taken Shurmur plays and folded them in with DeFilippo plays. That's something that DeFilippo might not have been able to do. Not that, you know, the plays he's like not allowed to use Shurmur plays, but they're clearly not going to be as readily available to him because he never worked under Shurmur. I don't think he did. He was never a, you know, Pat Shurmur disciple and never had access to that playbook. I think it's really interesting that Kevin Stefanski's been using that stuff. I think it's really cool. That's just me nerding out about something like that real quick. I also want to talk a little bit about the offensive line. I'm going to get into it a little bit more later, but they are kind of hot, at least in pass protection. In run blocking, it's been up and down, and they've had been able to string together a couple good games against Miami and Detroit because they're bad teams. But on the pass blocking side, Kirk Cousins hasn't been under a lot of pressure for the last four games. That's stopped, you know, that it, when it was just the Patriots game, that was the first game when I kind of came out of that one thinking, oh, yeah, the offensive line played well. That's kind of nice. And you think, all right, well, that's probably going to go snap back to reality, right? They'll be right back to their ways of, you know, immediate sacks and the things we're all used to as Vikings fans. But then they didn't. Then they played again really well against Seattle, and then you kind of look and you say, all right, those defensive lines aren't world beaters, right? You've got, like, the Patriots with, like, Adam Butler. They've had all kinds of defensive line problems and pressure problems that have kind of plagued them throughout the year. You know, you've got the Seahawks have a very good run-stopping defense, but they'd had trouble getting to the quarterback. But, you know, four games, that's starting to look like a little bit more of a trend. And if the offensive line is getting hot and the defense is white hot, there was a great tweet that went around from Jonas Stark, who is very engaged. He's a great Twitter follow. And he laid out a whole bunch of defensive stats of the last three games. And again, these are not world-beating passing offenses, right? The Seahawks, they're a run-first team. You know, the Dolphins have had all kinds of problems. The Lions have had all kinds of problems. But they're getting crushed. I think 341 pass yards between all three of those teams. That would be a reasonable single game. That's three games against the Vikings defense. Things are starting to get kind of hot right at the right time. And if you wanted to be a homer, if you wanted to be a believer, you would say this is exactly what you want, right? Get hot right at the same time as, you know, the Saints have had a hiccup or two. The Rams have had a hiccup or two. We don't know how the Bears will do in the playoffs. That, you know, kind of that iteration of the Bears has never been in the playoffs. Suddenly you start to see a little brew cooking. So that's all I have to say on the Lions game. I know it was earlier in the week. So let's put that one in the books and then let's talk about the Bears. So the Bears are good. This is the harsh reality. The Bears are a better team than the Vikings. We saw that on Sunday night. We've seen that throughout the season. Their record shows it. Their stats show it. They're a better team. We know this. But the Vikings are at home. Divisional games always get a little weird. And the Vikings are actually favored by 4.5 points. This is very good because this game has a lot riding on it. If you have not been paying attention to the playoff scenarios, let me break it down for you really fast. In the NFC, five teams are decided. The Saints have home field. The Rams probably have the bye. If the Bears beat us and the Rams lose, they'll get the bye, but they have the 3 seed. Dallas has clinched the NFC East. They're the 4 seed. And Seattle has the first wild card spot. The second wild card spot is currently held by the Minnesota Vikings, with the Eagles nipping at their heels. The Eagles play in Washington against a broken Redskins team led by Josh Johnson, so it is pretty likely that they win that game. Though, like I just said, divisional games on the road get weird. There's a chance. It's not worth hanging your hat on, though. The Vikings most likely have to win to get in the playoffs. And Mike Zimmer, in his press conferences, has been treating this game as such. He's been saying, you know, we're in a playoff mentality. This is a playoff game. This is an elimination game, he is treating it as. He doesn't want to back into the playoffs. I would take it over not making the playoffs, but I digress. So the game is important, and the bad news is the Bears are good. We have an important game against a good team, And we're in the afternoon slot, which is going to put us on a bit of a national stage. People are, you know, all eyes are going to be on this one because it basically decides a whole bunch of the playoff seeding, right? It's going to decide who's the sixth seed, and it's going to decide maybe, unless, you know, if the Rams are losing to the Niners somehow, but it's going to have a part to play in who gets the bye, who gets to be at home in the divisional round. So what happened last time? You know, that game was pretty hard to watch as a Vikings fan. What happened last time? And how do we figure out what that was? And then as fans, you know, think about what would we do? How would we fix it? And how would we attack this game so that it goes a little bit differently? So the first thing is spying Mitch Trubisky. So that starts with the understanding that Mitch Trubisky, through the air, as purely just as a passer, if you ignore all of his running, which is not fair to him, but just for the sake of figuring him out, ignore all his running, he has not been very good. In terms of accuracy percentage, this is a Pro Football Focus stat, and I know that sounds really scary, but all it is completions plus drop. You take your completion percentage, we're all familiar with that, and then also give you credit if it was a drop and say, hey, you threw enough, good enough pass, we'll count it as though it were a completion, because we're just trying to look at the quarterback here, right? And he's 33rd in that. And if you give him passer rating, which can at least include, you know, yards and touchdowns and stuff, because in terms of completion percentage, you know, sometimes a completion for 1 yard happens, we shouldn't give him credit for that, he only goes up to 19th. He has not been a world beater through the air, but that hasn't mattered because he's crushed people with his legs. There's another stat called ESPN QBR, maybe in the offseason I'll go over why I like it. It's a bit of a controversial stat, but essentially it's a dressed up kind of adjusted version of EPA. And all EPA is, it's called expected points added, is if you take something, take every like down and distance and assign a value to it. So, all right, 2nd and 5 from midfield, teams score this often, you know, take all the drives that ended up at that moment and then average out the points those drives ended up in and say, all right, team scores 4.5 points from there, for example. Sometimes it's a field goal, sometimes it's a touchdown, 4.5 points. And then the offense will make a big 15-yard completion, and now they'll be 1st and 10 in field goal range. All right, well, that goes up now, right? Because most teams will get a field goal from there, and a lot of them will get a touchdown. Well, maybe it's 5.5 points. Well, that play gave you a point of expected points. It added 1 expected point. So EPA is a nice way to kind of measure how you're moving the offense while taking into account stuff like down and distance and situation and all that, and making sure that it gives quarterbacks credit when they scramble for a first down. That's a good play. You should get credit for that, even though you didn't do it the traditional way that everybody wants you to. And so Mitch Trubisky rises to all the top of those lists, to QBR and all the, if they include QB running and kind of give you credit for that, suddenly Mitch Trubisky is one of the most productive quarterbacks in the league. So what does that tell us? Well, it tells us the same story we would see on tape. If you've watched any Bears games, including the Bears-Vikings game we've already seen, but other Bears games, if you ever watched their other games, you'll see Mitch Trubisky running all over defenses and not really being able to do things through the air, but it doesn't matter because he's running around and just gashing defenses on the ground with his scrambles. So the solution to that problem is to use what's called a QB spy. Now, if you're a Madden player, you might actually be very familiar with this concept. But if not, all a QB spy means is that take a linebacker or a safety or something, and instead of having that player go into coverage, you know, cover a zone or cover a person, you just have them stay and watch the quarterback. Their whole job is to watch the quarterback, and if the quarterback starts to scramble outside or starts to run, or if you see them kind of standing in the pocket for too long, you realize no one's open, your job is to tackle the quarterback. You're not supposed to pass rush the quarterback or get swept up in the offensive line. You're supposed to stay back and make sure that if the quarterback tries to scramble for a bajillion yards, like we just saw Russell Wilson do that to us a couple weeks ago, your job is to prevent that specifically from happening. And it's kind of, it's a high cost thing to do, because usually in a sophisticated NFL, against a sophisticated NFL offense, you need everybody you can get in coverage unless you're blitzing. So it's hard to have some, you know, a linebacker just stay there and do ostensibly nothing on the play unless the guy scrambles. But against a guy like Mitch Trubisky, who has kind of proven that he can't punish you through the air for having one fewer guy in coverage, it makes sense to spy him. The Vikings didn't do that, and a lot of teams haven't done that against the Bears, and it's gashed them all every single time. So the first step, if I were Mike Zimmer, I would say, all right, we're doing a spy a lot. You can't do it every play. You can't do anything every play. But We're going to spy him a lot. We're going to make sure that on downs where he has to pass and, or, you know, on downs where he could really, really kill us with his legs, you know, third and 13, and he can convert that with his legs and it'd be a killer. We're going to spy him and we're going to make sure he cannot do that. And the other kind of element to that is keeping contained. Now, I explained this, I think in my very first show, I explained this when we were game planning for Russell Wilson. You have to have the defensive ends, Griffin and Hunter, have to be a little bit more patient. Instead of pinning their ears back and running toward the quarterback as soon as they get by their guy, that gives the quarterback a chance to, you know, dodge them, be slippery, and roll out that way, and then, you know, make a big play. You have to just kind of hold your line. Make sure that if whatever pressure gets there, he can't bail your way. You'll get him if he bails. You know, if I'm rushing from the right and he bails right, I can now get him. So moving to the other side of the ball, we really got our butts handed to us by this Bears defense. And part of that was, you know, John DeFilippo's problems were mounting at that time. And you know, maybe Kevin Stefanski will come in and do things a little bit better. But from a game plan perspective, we can also kind of look at what John DeFilippo was doing that was wrong. We can, you know, instead of just saying, oh, Stefanski's here, he'll fix it. Let's look. Let's see what Kevin Stefanski needs to do to fix it. And the first thing is that Khalil Mack is a world beater, and he was left one-on-one with Riley Reiff a whole bunch, and he caused a whole bunch of problems. He got a strip sack, he got, you know, into Cousins' face all the time. We left Riley Reiff, we basically said, all right, Riley Reiff, he's our big, you know, big ticket, we paid a bunch of money in free agency to get this left tackle, he should be able to handle the superstar defensive end. And that's hubris. That was a poor idea, and instead of helping a guy who is, let's be honest, league average maybe, against this, like, world-beating superstar, we should have chipped him. We should have used running backs a little bit more. And they did some of this. What they didn't completely neglect it, but they didn't do it enough. They should have done it more. And if I'm Kevin Stefanski and Mike Zimmer, and I'm, you know, the offensive line coaching duo, Clancy Barone and Andrew Janoco, I'm telling them, hey, you know, get a shoulder in on this guy. Let's neutralize him. It sacrifices, you know, the cost to doing that. There's always a cost. Is that you can't run that deep of a route, and it's kind of hard to time things out when you have to get a push in on someone first. But that's okay, you know, have Dalvin Cook just give him a shoulder and then leak out and be a check down. That is a lot better than leaving Riley Reiff one-on-one, somebody who will definitely get outclassed by Khalil Mack. He's Khalil Mack. Let's not set this guy up to fail. And from a run game perspective, they ran at Akeem Hicks way too much. Akeem Hicks is the Chicago Bears defensive tackle. He's kind of their Linval Joseph figure, and he has been awesome against the run. He's been an unbelievable defensive lineman. We got to run around that guy. We got to run to the other side or double team him, or, you know, make sure that we're not allowing the Bears to showcase what makes them good. Now, the problem is that what part of what makes them good is that their secondary is amazing, and they're going to be able to showcase that because you have to pass eventually. And, you know, in the last game, they were able to really neutralize Diggs and Thielen by using the same kind of double coverage techniques and stuff, but they also have the talent to do it. They have these two unbelievable safeties, you know, Adrian Amos and Eddie Jackson. They have good corners. They've lost Bryce Callahan since the last time we met, and that's very important. We'll get into the full injury report in a second here. But, you know, you're going to have to hope that Diggs and Thielen can make some plays against single coverage because the Bears have the personnel to test that. Hopefully, you can punish them. All right, so the Vikings are pretty hurt coming into this game. Now, they had been healthy for the last few games, and that's good. They were allowed to get a little bit of rhythm together. And full disclosure here, I'm recording this on Wednesday night, so I don't have the Thursday or the Friday injury reports to go off of, so maybe this will be proven wrong when those come out and more guys are participating in practice. But the DNPs for Wednesday were pretty rough. Marcus Sherrill's still out with the foot injury. You'll probably see a little bit more of Brandon Zylstra or Chad Beebe back there. Xavier Rhodes is still a DNP with a groin. Hopefully he'll be able to play in the game. He's a little bit of a gamer, but he has been playing through soft tissue injuries all year, and he kind of hasn't really been himself because of it. Mike Remmers was DNP with a low back. You might have to see Danny Isadora because of that. Eric Kendricks still isn't practicing with a hamstring. Might be more Eric Wilson. Still have Linval Joseph sitting out with his knee. He had the same injury in practice last week. He ended up playing, but otherwise it could be, you know, Jaleel Johnson's time. And we are sans one CJ Ham with an elbow. All those guys did not practice on Wednesday. Hopefully we'll see some of them come back on Thursday and Friday, and then we can see them come through for the game. You also have Anthony Barr and David Morgan showing up on the injury report. They're full participants, so hopefully they'll be fine. On the other side, Eddie Jackson, one of those safeties I just mentioned, a linebacker Aaron Lynch, and their wide receiver Allen Robinson, who has been in and out of games, all did not practice either. So with the Bears and the situation that they're in, you know, they have a potentially a bye to play for. But if you're looking at it realistically, the Rams would have to lose at home to San Francisco, who's in the number one pick derby, for that to even be possible. So the Bears don't have as much on the line as they usually would in a divisional game. They've already wrapped up the division. They know they're getting a home playoff game. So it's a little more likely that the Bears might shut down some of those guys, make sure they're okay for the playoffs, and kind of understand, you know, they're not just going to tank the game. They're not going to sit all their starters because they could still potentially get a bye, but they might be a little bit more incentivized to kind of play it safe, and that might work in the Vikings' favor. Now, that whole dynamic is really interesting, right? Because the Vikings have everything on the line. If they lose, they're now counting on Josh Johnson or they're out of the playoffs. So they really, really, really have to win. If they win, though, and if everything else kind of goes the way it's favored to go, they're going to have to go right back into Chicago and play them again. So the Vikings have a lot more incentive in this game to lay all their cards out on the table and play everything they can play and use every, you know, if you don't use a trick and you end up losing, you lose with tricks up your sleeve, those tricks go unused, then you're just wasting it, right? So put it all on the table, win the game. It's a playoff game for you. For the Bears, they don't have that. They can keep things close to the vest, and seeing that there's a probable rematch on the horizon, they can kind of keep all their tricks very close and then unleash everything in the playoff game, where the Vikings will have kind of used all their things and revealed all their secrets. It's a lot harder for the Vikings to save secrets and save things for a playoff game that they might not get to if they don't use those things. So before we wrap up today, as always, we've got some bold predictions. I asked you on Twitter, at Locked On Vikings, please follow the show if you want to play along. Obviously, the season's almost over, but we'll get to it next year, and we'll do a lot more fan interaction stuff over the offseason. So please go follow Twitter and pay attention and answer the questions if you want some shout-outs. I've got some bold predictions. First one of the day comes from Eddie Derifield on Twitter. He says, Rudolph has a huge game, Cooks has more receiving yards than running yards, and we get by on a made 51-yard field goal. I love this. Rudolph having another huge game, that would be really, really awesome. Cook having more receiving yards than running yards, I don't actually think that's that bold. Dalvin Cook in the passing game has been way better than Dalvin Cook in the running game. Personally, I don't care. I think just get this guy the ball. He can make guys miss in space, and that's really valuable. And getting by on a made 51-yard field goal. There have been a couple people saying, oh, Dan Bailey makes all his kicks. That's happened a few times. I don't think that's bold enough. The second one comes from Kyle P. Slaby, who says the Vikings will barely lose on a missed field goal, so the opposite here, and Adrian Peterson will fumble a go-ahead scoop and score versus Philly. So it is written in the stars, so that's the kind of opposite here. I don't know if Philly's going to need a scoop and score for the go-ahead in this one, but it would be particularly Vikings if it were Adrian Peterson. I mean, he did say earlier in the year that he wanted to knock the Vikings out of the playoffs, right? Maybe it is still possible. And the third and final bold prediction we are going to do today comes from Rob Winnick at VikesFan47. Says, Vikings give up no sacks and rush for 175+. This would be awesome. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about the hot streak that the offensive line is on, and they're really starting to gel a little bit now. Obviously, Mike Remmers is not practicing, so maybe all that continuity will have a little wrench thrown in it. But, you know, you've had, after a lot of turmoil and injury, and, you know, Brett Jones earlier in the year, and those guys getting together, they've been able to kind of gel a little bit. And I think maybe it's possible. Now, no sacks on a Kirk Cousins team, that's a bold prediction. And rushing for 175+ would be an even bolder prediction, because most of the good returns have been in pass blocking. And that's a little bit about the way the team has been constructed. The offensive linemen have been a lot, that the Vikings have gotten are a lot smaller and a lot more nimble. That's meant for a zone running scheme where it's more about getting to a spot than it is, you know, pushing a guy and blowing a guy and winning leverage and stuff. But it's also a little bit more suited for pass blocking. They wanted to make sure that they were more focused on protecting the quarterback than necessarily opening up running lanes. And now that the line is kind of gelling, they're going to do the thing that they're more naturally suited to do a little bit better, which is pass protect versus run block. So it would be amazing if they were able to put up a buck 75 on this vaunted Bears defense with their unbelievable linebacking, you know, their young linebacking core and Leonard Floyd, and even a good run support secondary, and you know, Akeem Hicks in there and Khalil Mack, that would be an amazing accomplishment. And I hope we see it, but it is now time for me to sign off for the last time of this regular season. Hopefully we still have Vikings games to talk about in the next week or few. My name is Luke Braun. As always, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can follow the show at LockedOnVikings, and we're going to be doing fan interaction stuff over the offseason, which is coming up soon. So please follow the Twitter account and participate in that if you want a shout out. Hope we have another game to talk about next week, and skull!